Welcome to the third pre-season Supercoach Coach podcast of season 2017. I'm Marcus and I'm back again with FB Donkey.
G'day mate, starting to get real today, getting into the positions.
Yep, and we've got special guest Dunny joining us back for season 2017. Welcome back, mate.
Woo. Thanks, Marcus. Good to be back for 2017, ready for another big season of Supercoach.
Yeah, you've already been underway with Dream Team pre-season articles, I see, over on Dream Team Talk, so you must be well prepared to launch into some conversation about Supercoach.
Well prepared for conversation. Don't know that my team's looking all that well prepared at the moment, though.
Very much looking forward to kicking off these positional shows. So to all of you listeners out there that haven't joined us before for pre-season, welcome. You've joined at the right time. We generally run one show a week running through the positions, normally midfield, rucks, defenders and forwards, before one final rookies and a recap show to launch into the season. And you've joined us at a good time because we're starting off in the midfield this week. So we went out to social media and got a few questions, and we've supplemented the rest with basically the players that we're picking from in the midfield. So looking forward to getting your thoughts and listening to how you're structuring your team early on in the season. The structure of today's show, we'll discuss the 110 plus premiums from season 2016, and then we'll look at players that have previously averaged 110 plus that can return to that average, players that have the potential to break out to that 110 plus range, injury or bargain premiums, bargain mid prices, and then a quick look at early midfield structure. So plenty to talk about, and even though it's sort of the most certain area that we can start on in terms of starting picks, there's still a lot of options to throw up in season 2017, and something that we flagged in our first couple of shows, Mark. Have you had a little bit more clarity in terms of who you're actually going to pick up this year in the midfield?
Yeah, absolutely, man. My team is starting to take shape, having some understanding of where the rookies are going to be and where to take value. So it's interesting being this early. I think that the teams are really, really different, the ones that I'm seeing between coaches out there, but I guess that trend will be that as the preseason goes on, teams will sort of converge a little bit.
Before we do jump into the show, I do want to mention that as we post the show out on supercoachcoach.com.au, you'll be able to find links on the actual podcast page itself to register for our ranked leagues, which tends to do pretty well each year. You'll be able to find league codes for our open leagues, the link to join our Supercoach Coach group, and as well as the application form to join our veterans discussion group. So if you're looking for any of those things, you'll be able to find that there. Have you guys managed to watch much footy over the last 3 days? We've had 3 days back of footy now in the preseason.
Yeah, slowly getting into it, mate. I think some of the games have been less useful than others. I think like the Giants-Eagles game, there was so many stars missing from that game that it was really hard to get much of a read on how people would actually be playing during the real season, because they'd be playing different roles to what they would be in that game. But yeah, there've been a couple of good games. The Thursday and Friday night games were pretty close and interesting to watch.
Yeah, I agree with that, Mark. I mean, probably the key for me with the preseason games is I tend to pay a lot more notice to the third or the final game, or if that's a long way from home for a team, sort of their, you know, where they play at home and where they play all of their stars. Because that's probably the big thing, is not who is playing, but who isn't playing in these games. So that helps you get a read on how the rest of those players are going.
Yeah. I've got another tip or a piece of advice as well, and that's to not pay too much attention to potentially new or out there structures or maybe alternate positions that individuals might be testing out, because in the preseason, teams tend to try different things a little bit. I know in our first game, Geelong trialed Harry Taylor up forward pretty much the entire game. That's unlikely, I would have thought, to happen for most of the 22 rounds over the course of the home and away season.
Sorry, Marcus, did you watch that game live or on TV?
I watched that on TV.
Because I thought they had Scott talking about that they were actually looking at doing that more permanently. Like, I'd heard about that a bit before they even went into the game, that they were looking to potentially put Taylor up forward this year.
Yeah, no, and I 100% agree with that. I think that that's going to happen more than in previous years, but I think that his position is still as an All-Australian centre-half back, but they want to potentially play him, you know, 30% up forward on a regular basis, as opposed to chucking him up there for three or four games a season, which is tended to be the case in previous seasons. So in the preseason, there's talk of him spending more time up forward. Early on in the games, they're going to trial him up forward and almost play him permanently up forward to see how he goes there. But then once you get to the actual games, it's not like all of a sudden he's going to pivot to become a 70% forward. I think he's still going to spend a bit of time down back. And so that's kind of what I mean by, you know, throwing a little bit of caution to the wind in terms of new positions or new game styles. Some of those things will stick, absolutely. But some of those things potentially could just be trialing out new positions or giving different exposure across a preseason game. All right, so let's get into the actual player conversation now. We'll start off with talking about the most expensive player in the game at the moment, and I think he probably deserves his own slot right up at the start of the show, and that's Patrick Dangerfield, $716,900 to start off the season off something like 130 average in 2016. Is that too much to pay? We had a question here from Brenton. Is it a trap to go for Danger, since in the past few years, 700K players have mostly decreased their value in scoring? So Rockliffe, Goldstein, and Fife are good examples in recent history. What do you guys reckon? Is Dangerfield more like the new Ablett, where you just pick him because he's your new captain week in and week out, or is there potential he might slide?
At the moment, Dangerfield is sitting in my team. He's the best player in the league as it stands for me. One of the things that I did look at in terms of that is, if you think you're going to wait for him until his price goes down a bit after the first few games, just having a look at Geelong's draw early on, in their first 10 games, they only play North, Hawthorn, and the Bulldogs from last year's final series. So for me, they've got a pretty good draw to start the season off. And due to that, I think he will maintain his price. And if he drops, I don't think it'll be too much. And the hard part about that is, if he doesn't drop too much, then you've got to try and get someone else up quickly enough to be able to get him into your side, and it's another two trades you'll need to use on that. So for me, I'm probably just going to lock him in to start with and just take the ride.
I think it's a really good question that Brendan's asked, because he's exactly right. Like, if you look back over the history of Supercoach, not even just the last 3 years, it's extremely rare that anyone can back up an average over 125, that 130 mark. Like, there's been a heap of players that have gone up there just for one season and then come back down to earth. So based on that, it does seem as though, unless you're Gary Ablett, it's likely that this is just a once-off standout year. And even looking at Dangerfield's own scoring history, he went 118 in 2012 and didn't get back above 115 until 2015. So he has got even his own up-and-down scoring. With that said, I think that the fact that, like Danny said, that the draw early in the year is a huge factor. The fact that we don't have Ablett anymore as a reliable standout captain pick, it means that you need someone else as a captain week in, week out. So yeah, he's been in and out of my team, but he's in at the moment. I'm picking him without a heap of confidence.
I'm pretty much in agreement with the both of you. A bit tentative, but yeah, that early season draw sounds particularly good, Donny. I hadn't really paid too much attention to our own draw yet, but that gives me good reason to keep him in my team for a little bit longer. I think early on in the season, I think I said last week, he was one of my first picked, and I haven't overthought that selection yet. But as we know, the closer we get to the actual lockout, the more you start to overthink these sort of players. So I'm sure he'll start flicking in and out once I get a bit more attracted to some mid-price value and have to look for a extra 100K. Next player, Nathan Fife. He's one that seems like a slam dunk pick at the moment. Dunny, is he a slam dunk for yourself?
He is in my side again at the moment, but I want to see a bit of form from him in the JLT Cup just to be completely confident that he's over that injury. But to be honest, he's almost going to have to fall over with another injury to drop out of the side.
Yep, 100% agree with that. Absolute lock. Got to have him in your team. There's a really good chance he's going to get injured, but his upside is too high and his price is too cheap to ignore.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we've covered off those two players who I think sort of sit in their own little circles right at the top of the pile. Then we're moving on to now the 110 plus averaging midfielders from last year. I'm just going to start by listing them out. Scotty Pendlebury, Gary Ablett, Lachie Neal, Joel Selwood, Zachy Merritt, Treloar, Tommy Rockliffe, Josh Kennedy, Dan Hannabury, and Lukey Parker. Now, it's quite a long list. I don't think we need to go through them one by one. Maybe if we can call out our sort of favourites who we're considering out of that pool. Dunny, you good to start us off?
Yeah, I'll kick us off there. Look, probably my favourite, and I tend to pick him every year out of that list, is JPK. he is usually fairly highly priced, but he's got a proven SC game, a Supercoach game about him. The last 3 years in a row, he's averaged 113. That sort of consistency just has to be rewarded in your side. With Tom Mitchell not in the team anymore, what's that going to do to his possessions? I think it'll actually only help him a little bit more. The other ones that I like in that list, I like Adam Treloar. I think his trajectory has been really good. I think he can take his game up another step. Pendlebury's always hard to go past because he's so consistent, but that move to half back, bit unsure as to how that's going to play out with his possession count. So, and the only other one in there that I'd probably comment on at the moment would be Lachie Neal. I'm a little worried about what's going to happen to his game with Fife back. Obviously, there won't be the number of possessions to go around, but you know, if Sandy gets back to his best this year, both of those guys could pick up a heap of possessions, particularly with no third man up.
I'd be happy to pick most of the guys in that list. I think the way that I'm sort of looking at it is which player could go above 120 and hurt you as a result of that? And looking at some durability stuff as well. So Ablett, he's someone that you can't completely rule out. He's averaged 114, even though he's been injured the last 2 years. His scoring history is just ridiculous, as everyone knows, and he's fairly cheap this year. I think that Joel Selwood could be someone that you pick this year just because Geelong does have that good draw early and the fact that he's finally had a good preseason, where he's, I know last year was a really limited preseason and he's still scored really well. The two that are in my team at the moment are Treloar. Agree with Dunny on that. Just his preseason last year was not very good at all and he still had a good year. So the upside there seems pretty good. And Dan Hannabury, who I think could go to another level this year. I think this might be the 120 average season that we get from Hannabury. So, and that could be benefited by Mitchell not being there. And he said in an interview recently he's been off the booze all summer and just like really looking to sort of come back after last year not winning the grand final. So they're players that I'm strongly considering. I think that Rockliffe and Ablett go into the same category for me. Their upside is just ridiculously huge, but their injury history is concerning. So some chance I might take a gamble on one of those guys as well. What do you reckon, Marcus?
No. Sorry, can I just jump in, Marcus, before you go there, mate? Just a couple of points on those two guys. Ablett, for me, I'd be looking at him post round 9 bye. I think, A, you'll get to see a bit of durability from him, and then he can run you straight through that bye period. And I did read an interesting stat on Hannabury earlier this morning, actually. It said that his overall efficiency was the sixth lowest from the top 50 possession getters last year, which is probably why I didn't mention him when I was looking at players.
For my own take on it, analysing the Sydney blokes, Hannabury looks like the standout to me. I think I was a fairly big fan of him last year, and I'll be a fairly big fan again this year. I'm a little bit more nervous about a potential step up to that 120 range because I saw Kennedy and Parker sort of steal points, Parker sort of early in the season and Kennedy late in the season, and I'm not sure that I can be guaranteed that Hannabury gets consistent enough points across 22 rounds to truly break out to that 120 range. Rockliffe and Ablett pretty much agree that they're really tempting, but the injury history is a concern. So that actually narrows my focus down to Treloar, I'd agree, is probably the standout there. Selwood, I also think, is fairly good, and playing for Geelong, a top four contender, I think makes him more attractive. Pendlebury, if you think he's going to be a top eight, top four contender, Collingwood are going to be a contender, then you've got to look at him closely. I mean, from seasons 2011 to 2014, he averaged 124 plus consecutively. 2015, he dropped down to 116 with an injury-affected year. And last year, a lot of us started with him hoping he'd get back up to that 120 plus range. Didn't quite happen with Collingwood not quite performing as they'd hoped, and that transition into the forward line was a little bit of an issue, and so Pendlebury moved back to that half back line to sort of aid with that forward movement, but that hurt his overall possessions at times. But if Collingwood can really step up, and they've got a lot of young talent to potentially be able to support it, then I think he's potentially a forgotten man that still has a fair bit left in him. We'll move on to the next bracket, the return to 110 plus range. These are blokes that have scored 110 plus in seasons past. They're Rory Sloane, Robbie Gray, and Callan Ward. You guys consider these good value alternatives compared to the first list that we went through? Any of those three sitting in your teams at the moment?
Well, I think Danny's probably an expert on a couple of them just because they're Adelaide boys. But from what I've heard, Sloane fractured his face again. training a couple of days ago, which would mean that he's going to miss some of the preseason, and just shows that like he's gotten injured again, because I think he's done an injury like that in the past as well. Robbie Gray, some talk of him moving back into the forward line, but if Port Adelaide do improve this year, which some people are suggesting they will, you'd think he'd still score really well. And I don't think I could pick Callum Ward just because of the amount of talent that's around him at GWS and the sharing of points. I'm not sure whether that's a good strategy or not, but they do seem to have a different star every week.
Yeah, I tend to agree with most of what you said there, Mark. Rory Sloane did fracture an eye socket, I understand, at training. I think it was Friday that happened. Apparently that's put him out for, I think they said, 5 to 6 weeks of... So basically he'll miss the whole JLT Cup or whatever it is this season. So his first... But they're saying he's right to go for that round one game against GWS here in Adelaide. Yeah, not last year. The year before, he did suffer a couple of cheekbone fractures throughout. So I think he did it once and then recurred it. So, yeah, I guess that's a bit of a nature of his game, though, getting in and under, getting to the bottom of the pack. Robbie Gray, completely agree with you, what you said. Port Adelaide will skyrocket up the ladder this year, so that will help his scoring. But at the moment, I just can't put him in my side. I just think there's better value around than that, and completely agree with Callum Ward. There's just way too many good players at GWS for him to be a really good option and to be able to get to that 120 or 110, 120 range again.
I think I agree with you guys. The only guy I would have considered really was Sloane. If he had not have gotten injured, he could have made my team. But I think, yeah, I wouldn't consider either of those three. So we've talked through a lot of guys that have scored 110 plus in seasons past so far. They're probably the established crew. Out of the group that did score 110 plus last year and have scored 110 plus in seasons past, could you guys give us a sort of 1, 2, 3 in terms of first picked in your team at this early stage?
Sure. So Treloar is probably the one that hasn't left my team so far. The rest are really, really hard to rank. I'd probably have Hannabry and Selwood in that group. But then, like, I'm still seriously considering Rockliffe and Pendlebury, so it's not an absolute lock, those top three. Danny?
I would have to agree with the Treloar selection. He's pretty much locked in my side at the moment. Following that, I really like JPK. He's been really solid for me the last few years, so he'd probably be considered in there. Third, wow, it's a tough choice. I think I'd have to agree with Joel Selwood as well. I think that uninterrupted preseason is going to really benefit him this year. And probably my roughie in there, if he hadn't had his eye socket smashed, with Rory Sloane. If he does get up really well for that round one, he might just sneak into my side.
I'm going to go Treloar number one as well, and then Selwood number two. My third probably would have been Pendlebury, but I think if I'm picking Treloar already and I'm not very confident about where Collingwood are going to place this year, then I'm less likely to pick Pendlebury. So my third would then be out of Hannabry and I think Gary Ablett. And so between the two of them, I think I'd lean toward Hannabry at this stage, but that's almost a day-to-day sort of preference that flips around a fair bit. So I think Ablett and Rockliffe are sort of the two ones that I can't really get my finger on. History says that they're champions and Supercoach sort of pigs as well, really. They just rack it up like no other. And I think that they both have bruised egos, and champions with bruised egos, you tend not to want to underestimate them. So anytime I spend too much time pondering them, they walk back into my side. All right, we'll move on to the next bracket of players. And this one's, we're getting to sort of predicting a breakout here. So players that have the potential to hit 110 plus that haven't really done it consistently before. So Dusty Martin is one, Bontempelli, Cripps, Cornelio, Titchell, Jack Stevens, Jack Viney, Lockie Hunter. These are the blokes that I think all make a pretty good case that they could step up and disrupt the established players that we've already covered. A lot of tempting options there. I've already professed my love for Bontempelli. Mark, Dunny, any particular player that really captures your attention in this category? They tend to carry a little bit more risk.
Yeah, I think that the two that probably stand out to me would be Tom Mitchell, just at the new club, taking on a role where the coach doesn't hate him. And that might allow him to flourish a little bit, and the Hawks should still have a pretty decent season. So I think his upside is he could have like Swanee like numbers one day. His upside is very, very high, I think. The other one that really stands out to me is Patrick Cripps. And I know that I think we've already spoken when Faz was on the show about the fact that he had some back problems in the preseason, but he'll probably get up for round one. I think this is sort of pretty standard for Cripps, that he's been struggling with some sort of injuries throughout different times in his very brief career, but he's always managed to get up for games. So if he does, he just showed late last year that he has the potential to be an absolute beast when it comes to Supercoach. So those two guys seem like they're just primed to go to that next level. I think Dustin Martin definitely would have the potential in maybe the right team. If you thought that the Tigers were a top four chance, then maybe, but considering they're a good bottom four chance, that might mean that he struggles to get 110 plus numbers. And Bontempelli, for all the reasons that you would mention, Marcus, has potential as well. What do you reckon, Dunny?
Yeah, look, I completely agree with Tom Mitchell. I think the new environment will certainly help him. The fact that, and I guess the other thing is, Hawthorn are looking to rebuild that midfield, you know, by shipping off Sam Mitchell and Jordan Lewis. So, you know, are they looking to build that midfield around Tom Mitchell, which means he won't get the crappy tagging jobs or whatever the hell it was Horse used to make him do that stuffed our teams up so badly? I do like Patrick Cripps. I was a bit worried by that back injury. I just want to see him in the JLT. I want to see him do a bit in there, but then he's a pretty good chance. I do like Bontempelli as well, Marcus. I think, you know, he does have that potential to break out and really push his game to the next level. And this will be, I think, the first year in a long time I haven't started with Dusty Martin, just losing that forward eligibility. Can't do it.
Yeah, I think Dusty, with the talk that he might spend a bit more time up forward with the acquisitions of Caddy and Prestia, is a little bit concerning. But otherwise, I'd be tempted, if I knew that he'd retain his midfield time, I'd be tempted to keep him, because there's no reason why he can't sort of keep improving. Bontempelli, already mentioned, is sort of my number one out of these bunch. The next would probably be a fellow player from a top four contender. I think when you're looking at these breakout players, it helps if they're already on a rising tide. So picking from a top four team tends to aid with your breakout decisions, because they might score 5 extra points just by virtue of the fact that they're playing for a top four team instead of actually sort of truly stepping out and improving purely on their own gameplay. So I think Cornelio would be the other one that I'd pay attention to. Similar concerns with all these Sydney teams around the share of the points scored, but it's his sixth season in the AFL now, and we know that sort of tends to be a golden time for a breakout. He went from 91 to 106 last year. I think that he's well and truly established himself and can certainly take it up to that next notch, as he should notch up 100 games in season 2017, yeah, barring no injuries.
It's interesting that he actually spent a lot of time tagging last year and averaged 105.
Yep. You would hope that that's just a part of giving him a different role to mature from, and he'll maybe spend a bit of time doing something different this year and getting more hands on the ball himself. The other one that I'd consider, because he's also at the Bulldogs, would be Lachie Hunter. He averaged 95 last year, which was a breakout of about 20 or so points. The only reason I'm not looking as closely at him is I think I'd either want to pick Bont or him, and I'd be more confident picking Bontempelli. And I think that when picking a breakout, your focus should be much more on picking somebody who has the potential to break out to 110 than just trying to find a 10-point average increase. So I think Lachie Hunter is likely to go from, let's say, 95 to 105 if he keeps improving and the Bulldogs stay in the top four. But I don't really see him going up into that 110-plus scoring bracket, and because of that, I'm less likely to consider him. Tom Mitchell's probably the only one I should sort of give my thoughts on out of the remaining. He tempts me, but I don't have a lot of confidence in the Hawthorn makeup. And now that Jaeger looked so good on Friday night as well, I'm less certain about the split of points, and potentially that maybe the clearance points will be split up between Mitchell and O'Meara. So if they're not a top four team and we're not scoring a lot of points, maybe they both can't sort of hit that next level.
Can I just mention one player that, Marcus, that I think could potentially break out from 96 to above 110, and that's Jack Viney, taking over, I think, his joint captain this year. And I think he showed in a number of games last year that he has the potential to score really big. And if he could just lose those low-scoring games from his season, then he definitely has the potential to average 110 in an improving Melbourne team.
Yeah, and there are still a lot of question marks over the makeup of the top eight. And Melbourne, by virtue of the fact that they missed out last year, and they're still an up-and-comer, and they haven't been in the top eight for a while, they're probably seen as outsiders. But you're right, Mark, if they improve and sort of sit in the 5-6-7 sort of ranking, Viney could very legitimately break out. All right, next to the injury/bargain premiums. So this bunch is probably going to be quite attractive from a price point of view. Dyson Heppel, which Mark has mentioned sort of, I think, once or twice every show so far this season. He got another shot at it today. We got Dion Prestio, crossed over to Richmond, had an injury-affected season, only played 14 games last year, and this year has the potential to step up to 110, I think, fairly legitimately. Swallow, we've seen in years past, step up to 110, hasn't quite returned to that mark since his Achilles injury, but last year played out 21 games. This year, can he get back to his best playing for North? Job Watson, returning from a ban last year, got a standing ovation on Thursday night, even from the Collingwood fans, which was nice to see. We got questions about why we didn't mention him when we were talking about those Essendon players that were returning. Be good to get your thoughts on him, Mark. Priced at about $450,000 this year. We got Mark Murphy, which is bound to tempt Mark at $430,000 as well, and Beams at that same price point. Plenty of value on offer. What stands out to you?
So the first one that stands out is Heppel. He just sort of eased himself into the contest on Thursday night. 106, 104 in his last two seasons. So I think he seems certainly like the sort of player that would be able to average 110 to 115 and presents a bunch of value. I guess whether he has that 120 upside is probably the reason why there's some questions over whether he'll make my final lineup. But keen to have him involved just because he's an absolute gun and he plays for the Bombers. Dane Beams, we did talk about a little bit, just depending on his injury. I think if he is not injured, he is an absolute lock at 430. He's got three seasons averaging over 110, including an average of 123 back in 2012. So, and we know that when we've had him in the past coming back from at an injury discount, he can be a really, really important player. But he doesn't seem like he's had a full preseason, but it'd be interesting to see him over the JLT. Mark Murphy's a tricky one. Obviously, he's one of my favourites, but has let me down in the past and hasn't averaged over 110 now since 2012. So this would have to be a huge return to form for him. He's sort of in and out of my side. Just because he hasn't done 110 average for such a long time is a bit of a concern for me. He was known to be so consistent in the past. So, and thoughts on Job? Obviously, Job has the potential to average high 115s if he was at his full best, but I think that that's just putting too much pressure on him. He could definitely average 110. It's definitely within the realm of possibility. Job can go absolutely huge. He looked fit. He looked ready to go. I think he will spend more time up forward than he has in the past this year once we get our full team on the park. And I don't want to put any extra pressure on Job. As a Bomber supporter, it's really tricky because there's so much emotion caught up with Job and so much like what I hope will happen versus what I think will happen. So I'm just happy to leave Job totally alone personally.
I don't think I'd be touching Job this season myself. Completely agree on Heppel. I think there's plenty of value to be had there. I really like him. I've had him before. Probably would have had him last year had he been playing, because I think his game is just improving, had been improving year on year. Beams, if I can see enough from him in the JLT, he'll definitely be locked in my side. As you say, he is just a gun player. Had a bit of trouble with that injury, but yeah, if he comes in, he'll be fantastic. The one that does trouble me in that list that I know a lot of people are talking about is Andrew Swallow. You know, he hasn't averaged over 100 in his last three seasons. The only thing that probably kept his average at 85 last year was that he had 7.5 tackles a game, only getting 20 disposals on average, which was a bit of a concern as well. And he actually played all but one game last year, or maybe all but two. So he's just not in the consideration for me.
I think that's a fair call out. Swallow and Murphy, I think, are both sort of in that camp where I think they've shown their upside, but potentially they might not be able to return to those heights anymore, whether it be the game sort of gone past them or even if their bodies are just a little bit more weathered. But yeah, I'd agree with that. And Watson, I'd agree on as well. So the only three I'd consider are Heppel, Prestia and Beams. Beams obviously is the most established as a premium scorer and therefore is very attractive as long as he can rock up for round one. Prestia and Heppel both on upward swings, both very attractive players, both shown very, very high propensity to score. I think Heppel's the obvious one just because he comes with a free discount. It's absolutely free. You could have considered picking him last year in the preseason off the back of the fact that he's a gun that's averaged 106 sort of two seasons in a row, and there's no reason why he can't step up. So I think with a year of sort of hunger brewing inside of him and another year in the gym bulking up, he does look pretty good. As much stick as I have given Mark for bringing his name up every single time we record, he does actually look pretty good. And Prestia would be one that I think preseason would determine a lot in terms of how good he looks and how he slots into the Richmond midfield. But if he starts banging out some massive games over the course of this preseason, I think a lot of people will start slotting him in, because at 96 average, we previously talked about Prestia, I think even up to 2-3 years ago, breaking out into that 110 bracket and being the first one at Gold Coast sort of being able to do it, even, you know, above Swallow and Amira sort of type. So I think he was very much sort of trending right at the top of the heap of those young midfielders when he was over at Gold Coast, and he does look really good. So of all the players that we've talked about that could break out to 110 or returning from injury and or have a bit of a discount to them, let's do the same thing. Top three. Mark, I can put you on the spot.
Okay, so my top three would be Cripps, Tom Mitchell and Heppel, with my value selection being Mark Murphy.
For me, my top three, Tom Mitchell clearly number one. I think I have to agree that Cripps probably number two. And then Fontempelli at number three, and my value selection in there would be Dane Beams if he's fit.
I'm going to go with Fontempelli number one, Heppel number two, and then go with maybe even Prestia number three, and then Beams as the potential value pick as well. All right, moving across to bargain mid-prices now. There's three in this section and all present very, very good value. Yago Mira came back and absolutely killed it when he actually spent the time on ground. Scott Selwood, he's priced at $280,000 and presents pretty good value if he can return to a decent average. And Swallow as well from Gold Coast, returning from injury at, I think, $280,000. First pick for mine when we went through the first picks last week in the midfield.
Out of the three, my concerns with Jaeger are, like, at his price, because he's over 300,000, you really need him to be sort of averaging 110 to be a good pick. Otherwise, he's going to be a bit like Libba last year, where, like, he turns out to be, if he averaged 105, he's an okay pick, but he's not a season-defining pick and probably requires an upgrade at some point. So I think that he becomes a really tricky pick, and I think that a lot of people are expecting that he's had 2 years of footy development when he hasn't been playing footy in the last 2 years. So it is a lot to expect him to average 110 this year and to be playing on a regular basis. So hopefully I can just watch him play and turn into an awesome footy player, but I don't think he'll be making my Supercoach team. Scott Selwood is definitely a smoky because he has averaged around the 100 mark in the past a while ago, but he's had so much trouble with that ankle injury and does seem to be in a good place right now. And if he can be, he could be an important cog in the Geelong midfield and definitely has the potential to be averaging 100, but still not in my team because I don't want to be picking too many of these guys at this sort of price. I think David Swallow, the fact that he's under 300,000, has averaged over 100 in the past, was a number one draft pick, should take on a huge role in the Gold Coast midfield this year, so, and has absolutely been flying on the track. So I think that at 280,000, he's a really good pick, and I can understand why you were liking him last week, Marcus. Yep. What do you reckon, Dunny?
100%, mate, 100%. Look, one of Swallow and O'Meara will be in my team to start the season. They just present way too much value. I think I do agree with you, and I have Swallow in my side at the moment, although I was very tempted after watching Jaeger the other night. You know, he looked pretty good. Scott Selwood hasn't even been on my radar, to be honest. I just don't know how he's going to fit into that side. I agree with you that he could be important to Geelong, but in what role is the concern for me? Just to see how he ends up there. But yeah, David Swallow is just way too much value, and if he goes all right in the JLT, he'll be a lock.
Yeah, Swallow obviously locked for mine. I think O'Meara, I agree with you, Mark, in the sense that at 315,000 or 18 or whatever he's priced at, you do want to get more than what we got out of Libba last year. He averaged 91.
Oh.
Yeah,
that's
so
not good enough.
I feel like Libba definitely felt like he was underperforming, and even when he was averaging 95, you felt like that wasn't quite good enough. But where I maybe differ with you a little bit, Mark, is that at that price point, even though I expect more than the 95 mark, I think 100, 105, I'd be pretty happy with. If I thought that his baseline was 100 with that potential to edge out to 105, I'd be fairly tempted to take him as a pick and understand that I might have to upgrade. But otherwise, an M8 that averages 105 that starts the season off at 315, I'd be pretty okay with. Out of Jaeger and Scott Selwood, I'm actually leaning a little bit closer to Scott Selwood because I think I've mentioned it many times before. I like the players under 300,000. Last year, I picked Menzel just because I couldn't find anyone. I had to pick somebody who missed round one and was under that price point. So, yeah, I really like Selwood. He averaged, I think, 74 last year in his three games back from injury. Really took his time to get back, play VFL, slowly work his way into it. Like you said, Mark, he's in a good place this season. They're looking for midfielders still to step up. We lost Caddy. Menegola stepped up, but I think if Selwood can sort of take it back, he is a former best and fairest winner and West Coast and vice captain. I think he's still got a lot of good football left in him and hopefully can be a decent pick. All right, last topic, and this one's just a quick sort of pulse check, really. I don't really anticipate this would be very definitive early on in the preseason, but structure-wise, how you guys structured up in your early season teams. I actually have sort of six premiums and one or two mid prices at the moment. How about you guys?
Yeah, I'm actually looking at a pretty similar setup to that, Marcus. I think that there's enough forward and back rookies available this year that maybe you put more of them in those positions. And there's so many of these players that we've spoken about today that their scoring is potentially so high, and there's a bunch of value in these players that I think you could easily pick six out of the players that we've discussed from today. So, yeah, looking at a similar setup to that, at the moment I'm six premiums, one mid-pricer, and then rookies. Obviously, it's very early in the season, but I think having six premiums or five premiums and a mid-pricer is probably going to be where I end up.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I am at the moment, is the five premiums plus a mid-pricer. Really just waiting for a few more of the rookies to present themselves, you know, as we get closer to that round one lineup that hopefully most teams will show us in the third round of the JLT series. So yeah, I think you've got to have at least five primos sitting in that midfield to start the season.
Any other thoughts before I wrap up the show, fellas?
No. I guess for me, the just make sure you're keeping a close eye on the JLT and looking at who's not playing as well as who is playing and who's playing well. Because if you see some of these mid prices absolutely dominate, just have a look to see, you know, is Pendles playing or is Treloar playing, you know, things like that. For Collingwood, for an example, and just be a bit careful when you're making those selections this time of year. Although it is good to have unlimited trades. It's lots of fun.
A good example is Josh Kelly, who scored 150 on the weekend, but none of the other key GWS mids were in that team. So
yeah.
Or even though Josh Kelly might have a really good year, it's going to be tough for him to be posting 150s regularly.
Just to wrap up this week's show, we didn't cover any of the rookies, and we're going to, as we mentioned at the top of the show, cover that on the last preseason show of the season. So apologies. I know we get asked about rookies all throughout the preseason, but we find it can be a bit fruitless sort of talking about them prior to seeing how the JLT pans out and getting a little bit more of a form line on those players. And to be honest, preseason injuries dictates a lot about sort of rookie opportunities as well. So we tend to wait a little while for that to play out. And the other sort of class of players that we didn't cover this week are any DPP players, especially because any mid forwards, mid defenders, mid rucks, you're going to pick them in the other line because you've got so many sort of premium options in the midfield that score 110 plus that you never pick a mid forward in your midfield. So we'll cover any of those DPPs in the other positional shows. Where do you think we'll go to next positionally, Mark? Maybe to the rucks?
Yeah, I think we'd normally probably go to the rucks next. Still a fair bit of information that we need to bring in about the forwards and the defenders before we do those shows, I think. So yeah, I'm ready to do the rucks, mate.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that show. It can often be a season defining decision in the rucks.
Yeah, so the rucks next week, and then likely to be back line and then forward line looks like the toughest cookie to crack this year, so that probably last, and then the rookies and recap. So that'll be our structure for the last few preseason shows. Don't forget, you can ask us questions on Facebook or Twitter over the course of the week, or we'll probably take questions Saturday for our next show. But you know what we're covering, we'll cover the rucks next. So if you have any questions about ruck selections, ruck structure, send them in and we'll try and get to it next week. And just before we head off, don't forget to support us at Patreon at patreon.com/supercoachcoach. We're going to kick off our campaign together with the launch of this podcast episode.
I noticed you added a link to the homepage, mate, that you can just click on support at the top of our homepage if you want to find out how to do that.
Yeah, we got quite a lot of questions about why do you make it so difficult for me to support you and help you out. And we've taken that on board. Very much sort of a work in progress. And, you know, we appreciate all the help that we got last year and acknowledge that we didn't get to deliver as much to our initial Patreon listeners as we wanted to because we just needed the support. I was starting a new job and we probably didn't get to think through what we could give back as much. But this season, we're definitely focused on that. We're going to organize a little bit of merch to give away as well as a little bit more bonus content in addition to the season review that was already posted over the off season, and I found that a pretty good enjoyable exercise to re-listen to. So don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you want bonus content, and to support the show you can head over there. Anyway, we've been talking for a fair while, so enough from us. Thank you very much, Dunny, for joining us. It's great to have you back on for season 2017, mate, and I'm very much looking forward to speaking to you throughout the season.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to be back. Hopefully you guys can give us some great info in the next couple of weeks, because I certainly need some help in my forward and back lines.
Mark, last words before we get off?
The Bombers are back.
brilliant. All right. See you, fellas. We'll catch you all next week for the Ruck Show. See ya.
Bye.
Hey.